Rasta no pickpocket, Rasta no run rapid, Rasta no want ratchet. Wolf in sheep clothing, what you gonna do, yeah? Do you read me? Can you feel me coming on? Good to suffer with the bad. Lord, it make me feel so sad. The good to suffer with the bad. Lord, it make me feel so sad. Look here. You think it's the air on your head. Make you dreader than dread. But it's the heart within. A Rasta no dwell in sin. Rasta no pickpocket. Rasta no run racket. Rasta no want ratchet. Wolf in sheep clothing, what you gonna do, yeah? Tell me what you gonna say. Talking about the judgment day. This is all right. Hey! Show me con, me no call no phone, yeah. You pick it up already. Who the cap fit? It might be wear it then. I'm pressure drop, sweet lord, and someone got to bear it, say. Rasta no pick pocket. Rasta no war ratchet. Rasta no commit crime. Rasta is love divine. Do you read me? Can you feel me coming on? Good suffer with the bad. Lord, it make me feel so sad. One more thing I like to say before I go away. One more thing I'd like to say. You think it's the hair on your head, making you dreader than dread. But it's the heart within. For Rasta no dwell in sin, yeah. Rasta no. Rasta no. Hey, Rasta no.
Thank you. Some, sir.
The middle lodger cried, addressing Gregor's father, and without wasting another word, pointed with his index finger at the slowly advancing Gregor. The violin fell silent. The middle lodger, with a shake of his head, smiled first at his friends, then looked at Gregor again. His father seemed to feel that getting rid of Gregor was for the moment less urgent than reassuring the lodgers, although they were not at all agitated, and seemed to derive more pleasure from Gregor than the violin playing. He hurried over to them, and tried with outstretched arms to drive them into their room, and at the same time to block their view of Gregor with his body. Now they really did get a little angry, though it was no longer possible to tell whether this was due to his father's behaviour, or because of the dawning realisation that, without their knowledge, they had had such a flatmate as Gregor. They demanded explanations from his father. They themselves now raised their arms, they plucked excitedly at their beards, and only slowly retreated to their room. His sister, meanwhile, had overcome her bewilderment caused by the abrupt end to her playing, and had suddenly, after holding violin and bow for a time in her limply hanging hands, while continuing to look at the music as if she were still playing, pulled herself together, placed the instrument on her mother's lap as she sat in her chair, fighting for breath with violently pumping lungs, and had run into the adjoining room, which the lodgers, driven on by his father, were now approaching more rapidly. Blankets and pillows could be seen flying into the air and falling back onto the bed, guided by his sister's practiced hands. Even before the lodgers had reached their room, she had finished making the beds and slipped out. His father seemed once more so overwhelmed by his obstinacy that he forgot every scrap of respect that he should, after all, have shown his tenants. He kept driving them on and on, until, already at the bedroom door, the middle lodger stamped his foot with a sound like thunder, and so brought his father to a halt. "I hereby declare," he said, raising his hand and looking round for Gregor's mother and sister as well, "that in view of the repellent conditions prevailing in this apartment and family"—here he spat with sudden resolve onto the floor—"I intend to vacate this room as of now. I shall not, of course, pay a penny for the period I have already spent here. I shall, on the other hand, consider taking action against you with claims that, I assure you, will be very easy to substantiate." He fell silent, and looked straight ahead, as if he were expecting something. And indeed his two friends chimed in at once with, "We also give notice, as of now." Whereupon he seized the door handle and slammed the door. Gregor's father staggered, groped his way to his chair, and slumped onto it. He might have been stretching himself out for his customary evening nap, but the heavy nodding of his head, as if it had lost all support, showed that he was by no means asleep. All this time, Gregor had been lying motionless where the lodgers first discovered him. Disappointment at the failure of his plan, but perhaps also the weakness caused by so much fasting, made it impossible for him to move. He feared, with some degree of certainty, that any moment now he was about to suffer a general breakdown, and waited. Not even the violin startled him when it slipped from his mother's trembling fingers, fell off her lap, and hit the floor with a resounding clang. "Dear parents," said his sister, hitting the table with her hand by way of introduction, "things cannot go on like this. Maybe you don't realize it, but I do. I will not utter my brother's name in front of this monster. And so all I say is, we must try to get rid of it. We've done everything humanly possible to take care of it, to put up with it. No one can reproach us in the slightest."
"She's absolutely right," said his father to himself.
His mother, who still could not catch her breath, began to cough into her hand with a hollow sound, and a crazed look came in her eyes. His sister hurried over to her and put a hand on her forehead. His father, whose thoughts seemed to have crystallized as a result of his sister's words, had sat up straight and was playing with his messenger's cap among the plates that still lay on the table from the lodger's supper, casting occasional glances at Gregor's motionless form.
"We must try to get rid of it,"
his sister now said, addressing only her father, since her mother couldn't hear a word because of her coughing. "Or it will be the death of both of you. I can see it coming. Anyone who works as hard as we all do cannot take this constant torture at home as well. I can't stand it any more." And she burst into such a violent fit of weeping that her tears flowed onto her mother's face, from where she wiped them away with mechanical movements of her hand. "My child," said her father sympathetically and with noticeable understanding, "but what should we do?" Gregor's sister, who was normally so assured, merely shrugged her shoulders to indicate the helplessness that had come over her during her fit of weeping. "If he could understand us," said his father half questioningly, but his sister, still weeping, waved her hand violently to show that this was unthinkable. "If he could understand us," his father repeated, and by closing his eyes comprehended his daughter's conviction that this was impossible, "then maybe we could come to an agreement with him. But as things are..."
"It has to go," his sister cried. "It's the only way, father. You must try to forget that it's Gregor. Our real downfall is that we've believed it for so long. But how can it be Gregor? If it were Gregor, he would have realized long ago that it isn't possible for humans to live side by side with an animal like that, and would have gone away of his own free will. Then we wouldn't have a brother, but would be able to go on living and honor his memory. But as it is, this animal persecutes us, drives away our lodgers, clearly wants to take over the whole apartment and have us sleep in the street. Look, father!" she suddenly screamed. "He's at it again!" And in a fit of terror that Gregor found quite incomprehensible, she even abandoned her mother, literally pushing herself off from the chair, as if she would rather sacrifice her mother than remain in Gregor's vicinity, and dashed behind her father, who, alarmed solely by her behaviour, also stood up and half raised his arms in front of her, as if to protect her. But Gregor hadn't the slightest wish to frighten anyone, especially not his sister. He had merely begun to turn round in order to go back to his room, and that was naturally conspicuous, because in his ailing condition he could only execute the difficult manoeuvre with the help of his head, raising and banging it many times against the floor. He stopped in his tracks and looked round. They must have recognised his good intentions. The terror had only been temporary. Now they all looked at him sadly and in silence. His mother was slumped in her chair, her legs stretched out and pressed together, her eyes almost closing from exhaustion. His father and sister sat side by side. His sister had put her arm around their father's neck. "Perhaps they'll let me turn round now," Gregor thought, and resumed his labours. He could not help panting with the effort, and had to rest from time to time. Not that anyone was harassing him. Everything was left to him. When he had completed the turn, he began to crawl back at once in a straight line. He was astonished at the great distance that separated him from his room, and utterly failed to understand how, feeling so weak, he had recently covered the same ground almost without realizing it. Concentrating entirely on crawling fast, he hardly noticed that not a single exclamation or word disturbed his progress. Only when he was in the doorway did he turn his head, not all the way, for he felt his neck growing stiff, but enough to see that nothing had changed behind him, except that his sister had risen to her feet. His last glimpse was of his mother, who had fallen fast asleep. Hardly was he inside his room than the door was hastily closed, bolted, and locked. The sudden noise behind him scared Gregor so badly that his little legs buckled. It was his sister who had been in such a hurry. She had been standing there, upright and waiting, then she had leapt forward nimbly, Gregor had not even heard her coming, and she cried, "At last!" to her parents, as she turned the key in the lock. "And now?" Gregor asked himself, and looked around in the darkness. He soon discovered that he could no longer move at all. That did not surprise him.
In fact, he found it unnatural that, up until then, he had been able to get about on such thin little legs. Otherwise, he felt relatively comfortable. True, he had pains all over his body, but he had the impression that they were gradually growing fainter and fainter, and would eventually vanish altogether. By now he could hardly feel the rotten apple in his back, and the inflamed area around it, completely covered with soft dust. He recalled his family with tenderness and love. His conviction that he would have to disappear was, if possible, even firmer than his sister's. He remained in this state of vacant and peaceful reflection until the clock tower struck 3 in the morning. He was still conscious as everything grew brighter outside the window. Then, involuntarily, his head sank right down, and his last breath flowed feebly from his nostrils. When the cleaning woman came early in the morning, out of sheer energy and impatience, despite frequent requests not to do so, she would slam all the doors with such force that peaceful sleep, once she had arrived, was an impossibility throughout the apartment. She did not at first find anything out of the ordinary, as she paid Gregor her usual brief visit. She thought that he was lying there motionless on purpose, pretending that his feelings were hurt. She credited him with boundless intelligence. Because she happened to be holding the long broom, she tried to tickle Gregor with it from the safety of the door. When even this proved unsuccessful, she lost patience and gave Gregor a little prod, and it was only when she had shifted him from his place without encountering any resistance that she began to take notice. Having soon become aware of the true state of affairs, she reacted with amazement, whistled softly to herself, did not delay, but tore open the bedroom door and yelled into the darkness, "Take a look at this! It's dead! It's lying there as dead can be!" The Samsas sat bolt upright in their double bed, and took a while to get over the fright the cleaning woman had given them, before they finally grasped what she was saying. Then, however, Herr and Frau Samsa got hastily out of bed, each on their own side. Herr Samsa threw the blanket round his shoulders, Frau Samsa emerged in nothing but her nightdress. In this way, they entered Gregor's room. Meanwhile, the door of the living room, where Greta had been sleeping since the lodgers moved in, had also opened. She was fully dressed, as if she had not slept at all, an impression that her pale face seemed to confirm. "Dead?" asked Frau Samsa, and looked up inquiringly at the cleaning woman, although she could verify everything for herself and see that it was so, without verification.
"I'll say," said the cleaning woman,
and to prove it, she gave Gregor's corpse another huge shove to the side with her broom. Frau Samsa made as if to put a restraining hand on the broom, but did not do so.
"Well," said Herr Samsa, "may God be thanked."
He crossed himself, and the three women followed his example. Greta, without taking her eyes off the corpse, said, "Just look how thin he was. But then it's ages since he ate anything. The food used to come out again, just as it was taken in." And Gregor's body was indeed completely flat and dry, which could actually only now be observed, since the body was no longer held up by his little legs, and there was nothing else to distract the eye. "Come into our room for a while, Greta," said Frau Samsa, with a wistful smile. And Greta, not without looking back at the corpse, followed her parents into their bedroom. The cleaning woman closed the door and opened the window wide. Despite the early hour, the fresh air already had a touch of mildness to it. It was, after all, the end of March. The three lodgers emerged from their room and stared about them in astonishment for their breakfast. They had been forgotten. "Where's our breakfast?" the middle lodger sullenly asked the cleaning woman, but she put a finger to her lips, and then, hastily and silently, beckoned the lodgers to follow her into Gregor's room. They did so. And then, with their hands in the pockets of their somewhat shabby jackets, they stood around Gregor's corpse in the now sunlit room. Then the bedroom door opened, and Herr Samsa appeared in his uniform, with his wife on one arm, his daughter on the other. They all looked as though they'd been crying. From time to time, Greta pressed her face against her father's arm.
"Get out of my apartment this instant," said Herr Samsa, and pointed to the door without letting go of the women.
"How do you mean?" said the middle lodger, somewhat taken aback, and smiled a sickly smile. The other two had their hands behind their backs, and kept rubbing them together, as if in joyful anticipation of a major quarrel that was bound to end in their favour.
"I mean precisely what I say,"
replied Herr Samsa, and, escorted by the two women, marched in a straight line towards the lodger. The latter stood still at first, and looked at the floor, as if the thoughts in his head were being rearranged. "We'll be going, then," he concluded, and looked up at Herr Samsa, as though, in a sudden onset of humility, he was seeking fresh approval for even this decision. Herr Samsa merely gave him several brief nods, and glared at him. Whereupon the gentleman did indeed stride immediately into the hallway. His two friends, who for some time had been listening intently and had stopped rubbing their hands, now practically skipped after him, as if afraid that Herr Samsa might reach the hall before them and cut them off from their leader. In the hall, all three of them took their hats from the coat rack, pulled their canes from the umbrella stand, bowed silently, and left the apartment. With a mistrust that proved totally unfounded, Herr Samsa stepped out onto the landing with the two women. Leaning against the banister, they watched the three gentlemen slowly but steadily descend the long flight of stairs, disappear on each landing at the same bend of the stairwell, then re-emerge a few moments later. The further down they got, the more the Samsa family's interest in them dwindled, and when a butcher's boy, proudly bearing his basket on his head, passed them coming up and then climbed high above them, Herr Samsa and the women soon left the landing, and they all went back, as if relieved, into their apartment. They decided to spend the day resting and going for a walk. Not only had they earned this break from work, they positively needed it. And so they sat down at the table and wrote three letters of apology. Herr Samsa to his superiors at the bank, Frau Samsa to her employers, and Greta to the proprietor of the shop where she worked. While they were writing, the cleaning woman came in to say that she was going because she'd finished her morning's work. The three letter writers merely nodded at first without looking up, but when the cleaning woman still gave no sign of leaving, they looked up in annoyance.
"What is it, then?" asked Herr Samsa.
The cleaning woman stood smiling in the doorway, as though she had some great good news for the family, which, however, she would only disclose if thoroughly quizzed. The almost vertical little ostrich feather in her hat, which had irritated Herr Samsa all the time she'd been working for them, swayed gently in all directions.
"Well, what is it you want?" asked Frau Samsa, for whom the cleaning lady still had the most respect.
"It's like this," answered the cleaning woman, and couldn't continue immediately for so much good-natured laughter. "I mean, you mustn't worry about how to clear out that thing in there. It's already taken care of."
Frau Samsa and Greta bent over their letters as if to continue writing. Herr Samsa, perceiving that the cleaning woman now wished to describe everything in detail, checked her firmly with an upheld hand. But since she was not permitted to tell her story, she remembered she was in a great hurry, called out, obviously insulted, "Good riddance to all of you!" turned furiously on her heels, and left the apartment with a terrible slamming of doors.
"She'll get her notice this evening," said Herr Samsa.
But he received no answer from either his wife or his daughter, for the cleaning woman seemed to have shattered once more their barely regained peace of mind. They got up, went over to the window, and stayed there, clasping each other tightly. Herr Samsa turned his chair round to face them, and watched them in silence for a while. Then he called out,
"Come over here. Stop brooding over the past. And have a little consideration for me."
The women obeyed him at once, hurried over to him, caressed him, and quickly finished their letters. Then all three of them left the apartment together, something they had not done for months, and took the tram into the country just outside the town. The carriage, in which they were the only passengers, was brightly lit by the warm sun. Leaning back comfortably in their seats, they discussed their prospects for the future, which on closer examination appeared to be far from bad, for all three of them had jobs which, though they had never really discussed it, were entirely satisfactory and boded very well for the future. The greatest immediate improvement in their situation could, of course, be expected from a simple change of accommodation. They would now take a smaller and cheaper apartment, but better situated, and in every way simpler to manage than their present one, which Gregor had found. While they were talking in this way, Herr and Frau Samsa realized at almost the same moment, as they watched their daughter becoming increasingly animated, that recently, despite all the troubles that had turned her cheeks pale, she had blossomed into a beautiful and voluptuous girl. Growing quieter, and communicating almost unconsciously through glances, they reflected that it would soon be time to find her a good husband. And it was like a confirmation of their new dreams and good intentions, when at the end of the ride, their daughter stood up first and stretched her young body.
Somente bombas social world. Mas arte somente bomba no tempo de São João.
Thank you. Ja, ik geloof dat hier nog iemand gewoon wegstompelt. Ja, volgens mij gaat het wel lukken.
Ik ga even vertellen hoeveel agenten er nog in touw zijn.
Ja, hier is het eigenlijk wel weer mooi geweest. Oh, mijn fiets is verdwenen. Ik zie allemaal politie. Ah, gelukkig. Mijn fiets is nog daar. Ja. Lieve luisteraars, tot zover dan deze actie in het westelijke havengebied bij de kolenturbine. Er zijn flink wat steentjes versjouwd. Er is een heel mooi monument opgericht voor 1000 slachtoffers, dodelijke slachtoffers van onze kolenindustrie. Onze kolenoverslag. Er hangen nog wat smeren rond. Die hebben gedeclareerd dat het een bode is ergens, schijnt. Hebben we van horen zeggen. En de theaterstraat is bijna ingepakt. De theaterstraat die verantwoordelijk was voor het geweldige geluid wat ook op Radio Potterpoet te horen was. Want wij hebben altijd een goede band met de theaterstraat. Daar kunnen we altijd lekker in prikken. Trace is ondertussen nog even de politie aan het filmen. Die andere smeren staan een beetje rond te hangen. De laatste actievoerders zijn nog inpakken. De poepdoos is weg. En wij gaan ermee stoppen. Later gaan we nog wel weer een nieuwe uitzending maken. Maar op dit moment kan ik nog niet helemaal beoordelen wanneer het is. Want er is ook nog in Ruigoord de Groendag. Daar kun je bomen planten. Er is vanavond, dacht ik, in Okki iets met poëzie of zo. En morgen is er ook weer iets. Blijf lekker luisteren naar Radio Potterpoel, want er komt altijd meer. Maar je weet nooit wanneer.
مرت يا بالفور سنين ومرت أجيال وللحين انت رحت وغيرك راح ولساها أرض فلسطين عنا جيل يصون العهد اليوم وبكرة وبعد الغد ومهما لف الزمن ودار رح ننهي ذكرى هالوعد اسمع يا بالفور اسمع
هو حق بلادي رح يرجع
ولا غير الله ما نركع
وحنا الفلسطينية
اسمع يا بالفور اسمع
اسمع هو حق بلادي رح يرجع يا غير الله ما نركع وحنا الفلسطينية وحنا اصحابك يا فلسطين وبهالارض مزروعين من زمن الكنعانيين وعلى اصحاب الهويه تاريخ فلسطين كبير القدس النا مش للغير ومهما حاولت التزوير هالارض فلسطينيه اسمع يا بالفور اسمع هو حق بلادي رح يرجع تعتذر لنا هذا الوطن وطننا ما هو للصهيونية تسمح ولا ما تسمح من أرضه ما بتزحزح كل شي لازم يتوضح ويعتذر البريطانية اسمع يا بالفور اسمع حق بلادي رح يرجع شعب المظلوم ما راح نسكت بعد اليوم ما راح ننسى القضية اسمع يا بالفور اسمع وحق بلادي راح يرجع يا غير الله ما نركع وحنا الفلسطينية
You do.